Good morning. Wednesday, May 15th, 2013, 8:31 this morning. Glad to have you all here. We're opening the House Task Force on O&C Counties. We're going to adjust the schedule just a little bit as we get started here, so bear with me. However, Elizabeth, do you want to open and talk just briefly? Senator Roblin, you're going to visit on 496 and 581, is that correct?
581, 582.
581 and 582, okay. So I'll get back to that in just a moment. Do you want to make an opening comment about either of those?
Absolutely. Co-chairs, members of the task force, Senate Bill 581 would extend the sunset date to January 2nd, 2016 for statutes authorizing the declaration of a county fiscal emergency, the establishment of a fiscal assistance board, and the development of a recovery plan when an eligible county is unable to meet the minimally adequate level of state-required services. It would declare an emergency and is effective upon passage. And then Senate Bill 582A allows the Department of Consumer and Business Services to give special consideration to the unique needs of construction in rural and remote parts of the state.
All right, I'd like to open an informational meeting to discuss Senate Bill 581. I'd like to also open an informational meeting to discuss Senate Bill 582. I will just, for information purposes, point out that Senate Bill 581 currently sets in House rules, and I believe Senate Bill 582 has gone down to Ways and Means.
Correct.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
It's in the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development.
Terrific. With that, we'd like to invite Senator Roblin to the dais, please. Good morning. Welcome. Good to see you.
Thank you. Co-Chair Hannah and Co-Chair Hoyle and the rest of the committee. For the record, Arnie Roblin, Senate District 5, which goes from Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay and into Sheridan. So a nice part of the Oregon coast and a place that I would love any of you to visit anytime and spend a few nights, spend some money, have a good time on the coast. These two bills are part of a group of bills that came out of our joint committee last session, in which Representative Hannah and I co-chaired along with Senator Verger. The first one, 581, was actually the first big bill we had in that group, and it allowed the governor, along with counties, to make a declaration of fiscal distress. And once that declaration was made, they could set up a committee that would come in and help manage the money for the counties. And 50% of it would be paid by the counties that they're in, and 50% would be paid by the state. But the issue was, how do we go in and help with public safety? How do we go in and help with management of the resources and elections and all those different services that are provided by the counties that the state would have to take over in that situation? And we haven't had to use it. We're hopeful we will never have to use it, but it actually allows and puts a process in place. When we were studying it last session, we realized that there was really we don't have bankruptcy, so it's insolvency, and we didn't have any mechanism by which we could get in there and start figuring out how to help make this stuff work. And this one does that. It has the elected officials as part of the committee that makes it, and in fact, we set it up in such a way that the elected officials of the county and this board have to both have a majority agree to the actions that are going to be taken. So, and in public safety, the sheriff is also a voting member of that one. He's not a voting member on the other kinds of things, but he is a voting member on that one. And I think we did a pretty good job of kind of coming up with a plan that could work in those situations. And with 582, and I testified just the other day on 582 in the Ways and Means Committee, this bill also was one of the bills that we put in this session at the request of our previous committee last session. It was started out as a bill to say, what do we do with building codes directors in counties if they're going bankrupt? There is a process by which this county can give to the state, the building codes division, their responsibilities. And a number of counties have done that, but some haven't. And what happens in the case of an insolvent county, all of a sudden we don't have enough money to pay for our county building inspector. And so the process would take a couple of months, and we thought that would be crazy. So actually you're going insolvent and there's no building code, so all building would stop for the 2 months while we try to figure out how the state would take it over. This one allows the state to come in at the same time that it's happening, and in fact hire the person who is the building codes person and then just make it a state employee while this transition is happening, so that building codes can be met and other things can happen. And In the other bill, well, I'll just keep going. So that was happening. There was a bill over here in the House which had to do with expanding kind of some of the responsibilities and duties of the state building codes, and in particular about rural communities. So many of you know there's out on a lot of farm and forest lands, we build things like pole buildings and so on. And there have been conversations about, couldn't we just have kind of a pole building drawing online, and if we build it that way, we're okay. We don't have to go get an engineer and all these kind of stuff. And many of these buildings are not, they don't require architectural stuff, but we didn't have a process that would make that easier. This bill basically said, let's do that. Let's start having real conversations about some of these buildings that we build. It also put into statute what the court systems had already said, and that is that when it comes to building building a house or a building a structure, the person who has the final say over that is not the fire marshal, it's the building codes people. They have to work together, and part of the law says you have to have a conversation about how you're going to do that. But the issue in some of our rural buildings is we don't have the water necessarily or the pressure, so why are we putting sprinkler systems in that aren't going to be, what we do is build enough doors to get out quick and let it burn down, we'll build it back afterwards. I mean, that if it's going to happen, it's going to happen, and we don't, it's about keeping people safe, and then let's go rebuild the building. So there are ways in which we deal with things are a little different rurally, and this puts into building codes some of those deals. It gives an opportunity for people to get to the state building codes if they're having conflict, and maybe we can resolve some stuff. And it starts, I hope, having real conversations about making sure that some things that we do, we can get help from the building codes people directly, where, in fact, they can say, if you build it this way, in this situation, you're going to be fine. You don't have to go and get another drawing. A lot of the kinds of things that we build are not regulated architecturally and other kinds of stuff. It leaves in place, if you have an architectural drawing, that they have to be authorized to change those drawings. But in a lot of ways, it streamlines stuff so that people can get the building and other kinds of things that they need done out in those places. And I know we have building codes here to talk about it more specifically, but from my perspective, a really good bill, had a great hearing in Ways and Means, and it came out of our committee pretty unanimously, both of these bills. And I encourage you to look at the work that was done last time by this subcommittee. We made a decision at the end of the year that since we weren't able to do bills, that we would authorize certain bills to be sent forward. Both of these were ones that I think all of us are signed on to, because at the end of that session, we took action on certain bills, and then I made sure that since I had a committee, we would introduce them, and I talked to everybody, got their names on the bills, and this is a part of that suite to help us deal with situations that may come up because of the inability to have the resources necessary for our counties. Any questions?
Thank you, Senator Roblin. Do we have questions from the panel? If not, thank you so much for coming.
You.
Thank you for taking action on these on your side of the building.
Yep.
And
I appreciate getting them over here.
So. We'll make recommendation as the time is appropriate, as they're in rules and in Ways and Means, and move on.
And I just want to say I really appreciate this committee. I appreciated being on it when I was in the House last time and working with Co-Chair Hannah and trying to get some ideas and have conversations about the issues that are coming to forward. I thank Representative Hoyle for being willing to be a part of it this time, because I think that this committee will continue to have a real place and importance in the legislature to keep the out front there the issues that we have in many of these rural counties, and that maybe there are things the state can do to help them through these difficult times.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Well, again, we greatly appreciate it. Thank you. While we have informational meetings open on Senate Bill 581 and 582, I'd like to invite to the dais Mike MacArthur and Mark Long. If you could both come, I think, Mark, you're going to primarily talk about 582 and Mike 581. Do I have that correct? So either one of you that's comfortable and ready to start, feel comfortable to do so.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm going first.
Good. You know the drill. Introduction.
Yep.
And give us some information.
Good morning, Co-Chair Hannah, Co-Chair Hoyle, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark Long, Administrator of State Building Codes. I'm here today to talk to you about Senate Bill 582. And, again, I just want to extend my appreciation to Senator Roblin, Representative Clem, parts of this bill Representative Hoyle helped us with, Co-Chair Hannah. Many of you I've talked to about these issues for the last year, year and a half, and what you have before you in Senate Bill 582 is kind of a combined effort taking the wisdom of various bills around the legislature and trying to get the best into this particular piece of legislation. Also, before I get started, this is part of several bills that we've worked on, not in this package, to really improve. I think there's two components. We really wanted to improve the regulatory environment, especially for rural Oregon, because of the unique characteristics when you have large travel distance and the economic conditions that we have, as well as working on county assistance should there be emergencies. So there's really those two components kind of embedded in this bill. I've got a quick PowerPoint to just to provide you some background. Just again, I run state building codes. We were created in 1973. We're actually going to be celebrating this, the creation of the state building code next week here in the Capitol. But back then, we were created to create a single place to adopt codes in the state. Remember, the policy side of the building codes regulation is statewide. When we adopt the standard, that's carried out through 130 different city and county municipalities, and it is the minimum standard as well as the maximum standard. It is the uniform standard. That's a very unique regulatory model. You can see kind of the rest of the things that the legislature in 1973 was trying to accomplish by creating this unique model that we have. And just, by the way, I always tell folks, there's no other model like this in the rest of the country. We are the only state that has the statewide code in a fully integrated system where codes, inspectors, training, subcontractor, enforcement is all carried out in one place. Local administration in Oregon, as I mentioned, is carried out through 130 different city county building departments. They assume the programs from the state. These are not mandatory programs. They're optional, so cities and counties choose to provide those services locally. We provide services where the cities and counties do not, currently in two counties, Coosa County and Curry County. Current law assumes that these programs kind of operate independently. I do my part, the counties do their part. I'm going to talk to you about how this bill kind of changes that dynamic. These programs are paid by local building permit fees. They're not general fund either on my end or the local government necessarily, and they are dedicated primarily and only for the services that to carry out the permit inspections. And then local governments must use state inspection staff, and that's important in that one of the things that's causing difficulty for counties is staffing, which I'll talk about here in just a little bit. So this is the information that we get reported to us from the cities and counties. This is the last 5 years of the building permit revenue, and this is just permit revenue. This is not plan review revenue, not system development charges for you, those who feel me with that. Familiar with those issues, planning, environmental review. These are just the building permit and numbers as well as the revenue that occurs as reported to us from the various cities. And you can see the significant drop-off. I think more importantly is to kind of look at the map. And last time I was here talking to you about House Bill 2206, I kind of held up a map. This is that exact same map where you have 20 counties with an over 40% decline, which includes the cities within those counties in their building revenue over the last 5 years. And really, just so you get a sense of where the issues are, I'm working quite a bit in the kind of the four corners of the state, interestingly enough, in the Harney-Malheur, Baker County area, up here and up here. And in these areas, because of the downturn and the economic side just on construction, some of these programs, although you use the building permit revenue, it's dedicated. They do subsidize with general fund dollars. That creates challenges when you have declining timber payments or other matters going on. And then staffing, as I indicated, the training requirements for some of these inspectors is awfully robust. We've changed that. There's a bill that many of you voted on. In fact, it was 59-0 in the House, so I assume most of you did. To improve the training for building inspectors, primarily for rural Oregon, and we hope to help stabilize that. But what's happening is in these four areas, either because of economic condition, lack of staff, or just general problems, that they're having difficulty keeping these programs viable. This is the permit count. This is only designed to show you that you have declining revenues and then very large geographic areas, especially when you get into here, in here, all these areas, where, you know, you're having less than 500 inspections to do annually, declining revenue. That's a significant cost, because your fixed cost when you're trying to run these programs, you're sending inspectors out, you've got cars, you've got offices, and you're traveling great distances for, frankly, not a lot of money. It's hard to kind of keep those programs going. So that's kind of the point we were trying to illustrate and the problem that we're trying to solve. So Senate Bill 582, There's two parts to it. There's the county assistance part, which I'm going to go through, and then there's some policy improvements in it as well. And under the county assistance part, it gives us new tools for us to work in partnership under mutual agreement with counties and cities to combine resources. The idea being, instead of waiting for programs to become not viable for whatever particular reason, what if we were proactive and worked with our counties and our cities in kind of partnership, and maybe if we combined resources using some of the tools that I have at the state and working together, could we head off some of these problems that we see? So this really takes this kind of more proactive and new approach and combining and sharing, and it gives us the flexibility to essentially, when we're having an agreement with counties, to operate like the local governments do. And we think that that makes sense for these building inspections. So you can kind of see the areas there. The next piece is there's a regional component that's different than a lot of the bills that we've talked about in the past, where we not only can partner, but if it makes sense to take parts of a county for the purposes of building inspection, and that's what we're working on in kind of the southeast area. We're looking at all of Harney County, Malheur County, and parts of Baker County, kind of creating a new map for building inspection service delivery. Hopefully we'll connect everybody electronically. The state will come in and partner up, provide greater training, maybe some standardized forms, maybe some management overlay, and try to help stabilize those areas that are struggling. And that's kind of what Senate Bill 582 does as well. And then it has policy perspectives that Senator Roblin talked about to improve the regulation. Again, this bill being kind of the combination thinking of all the discussions occurring, these are just straight up making sure that when we adopt codes that we make special consideration for rural areas, that we clarify the decision-making between the fire folks and the building inspector so we don't create delays anywhere in the state, yet alone rural Oregon. Allows us to provide typical plans. Senator Roblin talked about the pole buildings and other things like that. We think that makes a lot of sense to make it easier for folks. And then enhanced ability to resolve disputes locally so that we get on top of issues and don't have projects delayed if they need some kind of help or second set of eyes. That is Senate Bill 582. As you mentioned, it was referred to Ways and Means. We had our first hearing last Thursday. It was very positive. Just so that this committee knows, we're not asking for any additional staff or any additional revenue. It was referred just to kind of tie into our budget. The simple concept is, and it specifically states this in the bill, that you're going to, hopefully if this bill passes, give us a lot of flexibility to do these partnership agreements and these other things, but we have to work within our limitation in staffing. We get a lot of flexibility underneath that. If we get significant amount of requests, as I mentioned in the Ways and Means Committee, then we'll have to come back, and that'll be a conversation about how you want to deal with that. But I'm willing to try new tools and these new partnership agreements to make it work within the existing structure before I come back and tell you, hey, we need XYZ as far as inspectors to help out. And with that, I'll conclude my remarks.
Representative.
Oh, Co-Chair Hanna, thank you. Can we go back a couple of slides? I want to make sure something's clear here.
Okay.
There's a slide that shows Coos County is rather a bit of an anomaly.
Yeah, I'm just going to see if I can do this. There we go.
And I've seen this a number of times now. It keeps popping out. And Mark, you've been great at making sure that people understand why that's one more.
Yep.
Yeah, why that's just the case.
Being slow, or I am, one of the two. So you're looking a representative right here.
Correct, and it has to do with a hospital expansion.
Correct. Co-Chair Hanna, Co-Chair Hoyle, Representative McCann. Again, this is the data that's provided, and when you're in some of the rural areas, a single project can kind of change the dynamics of that building inspection program. So we had a hospital go in Coos County, which put it into the positive area. But I wouldn't be here to suggest that Coos County, from an overall economic condition, is where we'd like it to be. So I think that's probably where the representative's coming from. But just from the data side, it can skew the numbers, and I should have pointed that out as well.
Follow-up. The case in point is the Oregonian article yesterday about Coos County being $3 million short. They've exhausted the timber payments that they've saved, and they're finding themselves in significantly dire straits. So I wanted to make sure that people understand that we had a large project that skewed that a little bit. So the case is not what it appears on that slide. Thank you.
Thank you.
Additional follow-up on the panel? Mark, thank you. We appreciate it. I know you've had to work with a number of offices to try to get through this, but I think the idea of even the regionalized inspection process or some of those partnerships where even though you got to travel a long distance or look at a pole barn versus, you know, whatever it is out there,
sure,
that's still progress and building, and we need to get that done. So I appreciate the work you've done, and thank you for coming and providing the testimony.
You bet. Thank you.
Mike. good morning. I believe you are here, and we still have an open informational meeting on Senate Bill 581. And if you'd like to proceed there, we are ready to hear from you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hanna, Co-Chair Hoyle, members of the committee. Thank you, Mike MacArthur, Association of Oregon Counties. Appreciate your continued attention to these issues having to do with the distressed counties and the ONC situation. The particular topic I'm here to talk about today is Senate Bill 581, but I'd like to back up a little bit and give it a bit more context. What you're being asked to do in 581 is to simply extend House Bill 4176 from the special or the short session in 2012. And what that does is codified in Oregon laws chapter 6 or chapter 76 section 1 through 5. And I can get into the detail of that in a minute, but what I'd like to do first is talk about why we need that, where we are in the development of the tools that we need to deal with distressed counties, essentially, because that's what we're talking about. So that takes us back to the guidebook. And this is the report from the 2009 from the Task Force on County Payments Federal Forest Payments and County Services. And it was chaired by Tim Nesbitt and Bobby Green, a whole cast of folks there involved from state and county. And we have 53 recommendations. 42 are still unimplemented. And this book is still very much, this guide is very much relevant today. And I'd like to take you particularly, I think I've given Elizabeth the page numbers, but you can refer to it, all this is online. But the need for fiscal distress legislation is on page 131. And so as Senator Roblin said, Oregon has no provision for bankruptcy. It was determined by the task force that that wouldn't be wise. It would raise borrowing costs for other local governments if we had that provision, so we recommended no provision for bankruptcy to deal with the distress in other ways.
I might take a time out for just a moment. You all see that your handouts indicate the pages that you're speaking of.
Well, I don't believe there's a handout for these pages, but there may
be. We do have it.
Yeah, that's why I wanted you to stop for a minute knew. Yes.
Well done, right. Elizabeth.
Thank you.
She just got that before the committee. But at any rate, so we looked at the elements of fiscal distress, and we decided that there needed to be a tiered system to deal with it. And tier one really is the monitor and technical assistance. And that's been taken up by the Secretary of State, and you may have heard from Gary Blackmer and his report about which counties, based on their calculations, are really distressed. I think he identifies 9. So the monitoring is going on. That's happening. We're keeping track of what's happening. Stage 2 is the Financial Control Board crafts a recovery plan. And so that's what we're trying to get at with 581, is a board that could come in, a third party, fresh set of eyes, look at the situation, make recommendations about what might be done should the county continue to not have the revenues necessary to provide adequate services. The stage 3 is the state takeover. And unfortunate as that may sound, it may become necessary if a state doesn't, or if a county doesn't have the revenues to provide adequate services. And I think in some cases, we may be nearing that. And we hear frequently, and Mark's heard it, about counties giving back services. Well, what if a county isn't able to perform a state mandated service that they can't give back? What happens then? And so we've been working on that for the last 4 years. Finally, the last stage is county dissolution. And that would mean either breaking the county up and signing it to other counties or complete state. It would be like the state department, state running that particular, those services in that county. So we're trying to avoid that. And so we have a number of things in the works through the legislative process to try and deal with this situation. And there's another handout you've been provided that itemizes some of the things that are going on now. And so this is the county fiscal distress recommendation legislation and bills. I'd like to take you quickly through that. So we have the task force and the 53 recommendations. We had the 2012 legislation, and then we have proposed 213 legislation, 581, which extends this fiscal distress mechanism. We have the 582A, as Mark has described, which I think is an outgrowth of two processes, actually. One was the County Payments Task Force, and one was the Government Efficiency Task Force, which identified these very welcome changes that Building Codes has brought forward. Senate Bill 772 consolidates public safety answering points. Senate Bill Joint Memorial 6 encourages Congress to enact the ONC Trust. Senate Bill 15 authorizes the county to request a declaration for emergency if it's providing less than minimally adequate property tax administration. In other words, because the legislation and Department of Revenue rules require a certain level of service and staffing by the Assessment and Taxation Departments. If you fall below that, you risk losing your CAFA grant. This allows some flexibility, and that's incorporated into House Bill 2206.
Mike, I want to interrupt you for just a moment. I want to be very clear for those listening and for those here. Senate Bill 772 does not consolidate. It provides incentive to consolidate. And I'm saying that because it's a very sensitive issue, and we've had a lot of discussion about those consolidations or potential consolidations, and the idea behind it was specific to provide incentive to consolidate, not to force consolidation. So I want to say that out loud, and if you have a different point of view, I'm welcome to hear it, but we worked really hard on making sure that it was an incentive to do so.
Coach Hannah, you're exactly right, and thank you for clarifying. Senate Bill 173 creates a service delivery technical assistance program in the governor's office, which is another way of getting at the stage two problem that we've got of getting ahead of the problem. And it would create the vision is working with the educational institutions, working with like retired county administrators, being able to set up a group of folks who could come in and advise a county about things they might be able to do. And then Senate Bill 496 defines patrol. Some counties are using their road funds to fund their rural road patrol, and there was some question about when is it patrol and when is it something else, and this defines that so that we can continue to have access to that tool as well. Senate Joint Memorial 10 urges Congress to create a trust to manage ONC. House Joint Resolution 2 is a constitutional amendment to authorize legislature for measure merging two or more counties. 2206 is an important piece of legislation that allows the Secretary of State to assume related duties and functions of the power of the county clerk and requires funds retained by the Director of Veterans Affairs to be distributed to a county without a county veteran service officer to be spent. In other words, continued veteran services where the county can't afford its part of the veteran service officer. And the fourth part is requires Department of Consumer and Business Services, the request of municipality is not carrying out that program, to enter an agreement to combine resources and enforce the Municipal Building Inspection Program. So House Bill 2924 authorizes the local government to file for relief under bankruptcy. 3404 applies House Bill 4177, which is the extension of the flexibility in the Assessment Taxation Program to 2015. And then House Bill 3453 is the ultimate tool, given a complete meltdown of a county's ability to provide services. This is under your consideration, under House consideration right now. Allow with the consent of just about everyone, allow the governor to reach in and actually levy an income tax.
Okay. I want to take a time out for a minute and just do a little bit of a process check.
Mm-hmm.
I've got an informational meeting open on Senate Bill 581, and I think I've allowed you the ultimate leeway to go through the list, but if you would readdress specific to 581 and come back to that.
Sure.
You guys have been a great partner to come and help us on this, but I do have a process to follow, and I'd like to come back to that if you would, please.
Certainly, Co-Chair Hannah. So what 581 does, just to review with you, the governing body of a county may seek a declaration for a fiscal emergency. They apply to the governor. The county determines the amount of fiscal assistance, amount needed to fund the fiscal assistance board. The governor takes a look at that and determines if if that's the case or not, and if so, he can declare a fiscal emergency. The governor then establishes the Fiscal Assistance Board. It specifies who's on the board. The board would consider and adopt a recovery plan, then update everyone on the costs of the Fiscal Assistance Board. The state would be determining what the actual costs are, and that's one of the provisions that I think made some people a little nervous. It's sort of an open checkbook situation for the county. So Section 2 specifies who is on the Fiscal Assistance Board, and Senator Roblin outlined that process, I think. And then the Fiscal Assistance Board shall use the services of permanent staff of the offices of the Governor, Secretary of State, and Treasurer. And then if the state officials shall fix the duties and amounts of compensation of these employees. So half the costs of administering the Fiscal Assistance Board is the responsibility of the county, and half is either appropriated by the legislature or sought through the emergency board. So they do their work, they make their recommendations, and this continues until such time as the fiscal emergency no longer exists.
So I want to make a point. You did a nice job of describing the bill. I think the original piece of legislation is what you described. 581, I think the idea is you're extending the sunset to 2016.
Correct.
Because everybody understands that. We're not changing the original bill. We're extending the sunset to 2016.
Correct.
Yeah. I interrupted you, but are you at a place?
Mr. Chair, I think that's the essence of it.
Yeah, thank you. Questions for Mike on that particular piece? Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming. We appreciate, again, all the work you've done, the partnership in working with these bills. Greatly appreciate that.
Thank you.
So with that, I think I'll close the informational meeting on Senate Bill 581 and close the informational meeting on Senate Bill 582. I will open an informational meeting for the discussion of House Bill 3404, and I would like to invite Representative Lively to provide an opening there.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Since I'm a new member here, I don't have all the experience of all these other efforts before, but I commend you for the efforts that have already been underway. And so when I was elected, one of the things I did was met with local jurisdictions and asked what their priorities were. And one of their priorities was to, quote, do no harm or do no further harm. Coming from a local elected official's perspective, I can tell you at times our frustration was rules changed at the state or mandates came down from the state that we had to comply with or respond to that we didn't necessarily have the means to do it. And so when I did that, we reached out to my different communities, and the county being one of those, given the condition, the financial condition, the county, and asked, you know, what's going on in the county and what can I do to help to try to address some of the issues. So there were several issues that we talked about that might help with the county fiscal thing that we could do at the state. And this one particular one in House Bill 3404 seemed to be the one first from my perspective that made the more logical sense, because we're only asking to continue something that was started before in relationship to this the financial crisis. So several things for me. One that was important from the standpoint, since it deals with assessment and taxation, a function that's very vital to the underlying pens for local governments, the whole collection of taxes and the counties charged with doing that, that it's important to maintain. Secondly, that the fiscal crisis, the funds that have been used in many cases to prop this up continues. The counties have new funds. In fact, they're less. And that we're not asking, what we're asking to do is just to extend the bill that was in place before to the second fiscal year, and we're not asking in that we change the requirements. So the counties still have to meet the requirements as far as the revenue is available. They have to be able to prove that they can carry out the functions of those and still meet those kind of requirements. So all that we're asking to do is to allow the same ability for counties to apply, be eligible for the grants to continue those functions at this particular time. So from my standpoint, being a new person, it seemed like a pretty straightforward, not understanding the relationship to a lot of these other things where it's at, but it seemed a little thing we could do that would help in those counties that are most impacted by the things. And this just gives the ability to maintain for another biennium, 2 years, continuing the same law that was in place last biennium.
Okay. Thank you very much. Elizabeth, do you have anything else to add on that particular piece?
No, sir.
Okay. If not, Alex and John Phillips had asked to be here. I don't see him in the room. So, good morning, Alex.
Good morning. Co-chairs Hannah, co-chair Hoyle, Alex Kyler, Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager. And I will, I think I've got a piece of material coming to the committee that I think describes the CAFA grant really in a nice way, which is the county's actual board packet that they dealt with about 3 weeks ago with respect to applying for the CAFA grant. So every county has to apply, well, every county wants to apply for a CAFA grant because it is state money that helps the assessment function. And so there's a couple things that I think that I'd like to bring to your attention. But like I said, if you'd like to review this and you have questions at any time, I'm happy to go over with you. On page 2 of this, the second paragraph, I think, gives a nice rundown of, in Lane County at any rate, in our current fiscal year, the CAFA fund is paying for about 19% of the cost of the A&T system. If you look there in that second sentence, the original intent of the bill, this is when CAFA was actually formed, was to pay 30-40% of the cost of A&T. I think really where they were targeting was about 34-35%. And over time, that amount has really dipped, notably in the 2009-11 biennium, when the state was really sort of entering the impacts of the recession, there was a $5 million biennial contribution to CAFA that got stripped in all the sweeps that went on during that biennium. So that was a pretty major hit to CAFA. As Lane County went into the into our current fiscal year, our administrator had given departments direction to cut their budgets by 25%. And that was, our assessor immediately said, you know, that's really going to put us in danger with respect to getting the CAFA grant approved from DOR. And so we actually did do one of the bills in the short session that was created from the previous task force was a bill, it was House Bill 4177, and it's what this bill is modeled after, to suggest that a county could cut by 15%, and as long as it would maintain, you know, the standards according to DOR, it would still qualify for the CAFA grant. And so all this measure is doing is suggesting that that gets extended out for actually the next two fiscal years. So while 4177 just addressed the county's fiscal year 13, the new measure 3404 would give us that same ability for FY14 and FY15. The at least for this year, described in the packet, the CAFA grant is not, or the assessor has not proposed to do anything different from last year. So there's actually a proposed flat budget, but what's nice about this bill is it would provide that backstop in case something happens, in case there has to be a cut. At least we've got DOR knowing that there are these counties that are in teetering on fiscal distress, and it does provide sort of an alert to say, you know, let's make sure that DOR does recognize the impact here. You can see that we did on page 4 of the document, you can see some of the cuts that we made in this fiscal year. We actually cut about $1.5 million out of the department. A lot of people went out, 11 FTE were eliminated, and you know, it was, we closed essentially the entire front desk. So there's it was an impact, certainly, for taxpayers in Lane County. This measure helped immeasurably. The final thing I'd like to say about the assessment and taxation function, especially with respect to CAFA, is you can see what we're doing is that this CAFA grant has to come in to DOR for review by May 1st. Well, so this board action that took place on April 23rd takes place even before the Budget Committee really starts to get going. I mean, they've had a couple informational meetings by that point, but they're not in deliberations. And so it really does sort of hold assessment and taxation almost harmless through the budget process, because A&T has essentially had to say, look, here's what we said we were going to do for our CAFA grant purposes, and thus it, you know, it does make it difficult for the budget committee to make many reductions to what's actually been proposed, given the timeline required by the CAFA grant.
Alex, I want to interrupt you for a minute, but it's just sort of a lay description. In my mind, this particular piece of legislation, despite other changes in funding streams to potentially distressed counties, gives them a little bit of certainty on their CAFA grant.
It does.
That's really the crux of this. I mean, despite any other funding revenue stream, this says to those counties on assessment taxation, here's what you might expect.
Yes.
Not a guarantee, but here's what you might expect based on where we are today.
And I think, Co-Chair Hannah, what Representative Lively pointed out was very important. It's not just the county operation. Lane County, for example, we've got 83 taxing districts, of which the county is one. But schools, fire, you name it, they're in there. And so when it's just imperative that that's a robust office, because everybody suffers when that office is in peril.
Thank you, Alex. Be patient right there for a moment, if you would. Representative Lively, do you have a closing comment or thought on this?
It just reinforces, and I just want to go back and thank Alex for doing that, but it reinforces from my standpoint the logic of continuing that, but more importantly, the tenets, how this reaches throughout the community, not just the counties, given all the fire districts and all everything that's dependent upon this system working very well and having the money that's authorized by the taxpayer for them to do it. So it makes sense to me.
Other members, further comment on that particular measure? All right. If you'll stay right there.
Yep.
I'm going to close the informational meeting on House Bill 3404. Open an informational meeting on Senate Bill 496. With us at the dais is Alex Kyler. Mr. Burrows, would you like to join us at this time? Mike, do you have further testimony on this particular piece on 496?
Mr. No.
Thank you very much. Alex, you're kind of in the hot seat already.
Yeah, sure.
So if you would finish, we would appreciate it.
Sure. Switching to the Department of the Sheriff.
There we go.
Yes. Co-Chair Hannah, Co-Chair Hoyle, I'm Alex Kyler, Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager, here to help you understand Senate Bill 496. Senate Bill 496 is really the extension of a couple of pieces of legislation that I think go back to the 2007 session with Senate Bill 808. And that was what was important in 2007 was that counties expected that the Secure Rural Schools Act was sunsetting. In fact, it was sunsetting. And so there was a big question mark about, we were sort of in the same position we are now, sort of at the fiscal cliff is where we thought we were at that point in time. And the idea came forward to suggest that the way that I think that's very important for members to understand about federal timber revenue is that Oregon is unique in that we have the ONC lands, which are managed by the Department of the Interior, and the Forest Service lands managed by Department of Ag. And the distribution, the revenue sharing distribution formula is different for each of those departments. So Forest Service revenue comes in and goes to two places, the county's road fund and the county's school fund, and ONC dollars, which is why they're so important, come into the county's discretionary general fund. What was proposed by Senate Bill 808 at the time was to suggest that those dollars from federal forest receipts that were coming into the county's road fund could in fact be switched over and used for patrolling of county roads by the county sheriff. And that was took a piece of legislation because county road funds typically are dedicated
especially with gas tax, constitutionally dedicated to just be used for maintenance and construction on county roads. So this measure allowed two counties, Douglas County and Lane County, to make that transfer, and all it said was patrolling of county roads. We were able to work on extending that measure to a total now of seven counties during the short session in February last year. Same provision for the patrolling of county roads. And what 496 does is define patrolling of county roads and how those dollars can be utilized. And this really did come from an effort in Lane County that certainly county councils were sharing concern about, which was that there were some who were questioning how counties were spending those monies within their sheriff's department. And so questions about, what if an officer is responding to, let's just say, a domestic violence call or a crime in progress? So are they really patrolling county roads? And we actually spent a lot of county council revenue resources on that particular question, because it was came to actual filing of three different suits to try to get at that question. So 496 is really in response to that, to suggest that we have, I think, clarified the intent that it's always been, since this measure was implemented, about what patrolling of county roads really means. We did, in fact, have one of the authors of 808, who is Senator Przanski, come to our budget committee hearing last year and put on the record this is what he was intending when the measure was before the legislature, and this is simply memorializing what I think has always been in place. I do have some information that I've handed to you that shows what the transfer has been over time, shows you what the total road fund dollars have been, the contribution from those federal forest lands, and how what the total budget has been for the police services division with respect to patrolling. One thing you might want to note on my chart, on the upper chart on my handout, is you can see the severe drop between FY11 and FY12, and that was really when, in 2008, what ultimately happened was SRS was reauthorized for 4 years. It was sort of a last minute thing that got stuffed into the toxic asset relief program by Senator Wyden, and it had a ramp down of 5% each year, with the fourth year a new formula being proposed. And it was sort of a 5-year gradual and then a steeper cliff. And that's what you see, is that steeper cliff reflected there.
Thank you, Alex. Mr. Barrows, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Co-Chair, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. I'm Dave Barrows. I represent the Association of O&C Counties. It's been my pleasure to do so for 47 years. I've talked to many of you about the O&C when you first came to the legislature. Probably for those of you who are senior, most of it's gone, and I understand that. You do have other topics to think about. We're here today to add our voice of support to this. Anything that this legislature can do to take dollars out of specific buckets and move them to the discretionary ability of the governing body to utilize in an appropriate way, as long as they stay within the law, is a great benefit. When this bill that involved Lane and Douglas County was first enacted in the last decade, they had situations where they had a lot of money in the road fund and not enough money in the general fund. And so services, including the sheriff, were being cut back, and here sat this big pot of money. And so this legislature has been very responsive to try to make as much as possible the ability to use that money in a way that provides a broader range of services within the bounds of what the law allows, and we strongly support that. Obviously, in my 47 years, I've never seen anything like we're going through right now. We are totally dependent on the federal government to fix this problem. It's their land, and They have title to it, and I think they have moral obligations, if not legal. And if I may, Mr. Chair, I'm going to take just a second to tell an anecdotal story, because I've been waiting for this to happen. It happened last week. A staff person, a person who works in this building, came to me. This individual resides in a major ONC county, and the individual said, "I'm moving." And I said, "Oh, gee, I'm sorry. I miss seeing you around." And the answer was, I said, "Do you have a job? Are you going someplace specific?" She says, "Well, I think I'm going to go to Portland, but I don't have a job." I said, "Well, then why are you leaving?" She says, "Because I'm scared to death. The lawlessness in my community is frightening me to the point where I really don't even want to go home on the weekends." That's the first. It won't be the last. And anything that you all can do to keep the movement forward on the ultimate solution 3,000 miles away is critical. And I thank you for all the work that you all have done in that regard, especially the two co-chairs. I know it worked hard on it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, gentlemen. I want to just say for the record, as we put a little clarity to this, we've had, we've made mention of the two counties. I think it was in 2007, and Alex, I'm reading from your material, so I'm stealing your material a little bit here. But for clarity, for those listening or watching, in 2007, it was Lane and Douglas County on the road fund piece. And then, as you mentioned, in 2012, added Coos and Curry, Josephine, Klamath, Lane, and Lynn. So those are the affected counties currently. Mr. Barrows again says, look, we took testimony in the short session about these counties with, $80 million in one fund and no patrol or that kind of thing. And that's what we got to. These conversations were, these folks in counties are staring at a lot of money in one checkbook and none in the other, and how do you do that? I think that the other piece about 496 is the language here in 496 mirrors the intent of the law, which was simply that the law was first established in 2007. It's remained, but it is for road and road patrol. And I think we're getting to that point, and I do appreciate both of you coming. Members, questions on that particular piece? If not, then thank you, gentlemen, and I will close the informational meeting on House Bill 3404. Do I have that open still?
Yeah.
And close the informational meeting on Senate Bill 496. Colleagues, we are next scheduled to meet on the 29th of this month at 8:30 in the morning, so please add that to your schedules if you have not already. Co-Chair Hoyle, any comments for closing?
No. On the 29th, we'll have information about the ballot measures in a number of our counties, and so we'll have a better idea of what we're going to be facing, and I think that'll guide our conversation, and thank you so much for the hearing.
And again, as you know, 3404 is in House Rules. 496 is in House Rules, 581 is in House Rules, and 582 is in Ways and Means. So we'll watch these and talk to our colleagues in those places about their movement. Any other comments for good of the order? Elizabeth, any comments from you?
There was a great story on NPR this morning about Josephine County, and it's worth listening to.
Yeah, great. All right, thank you to our staff. We appreciate it. With that, we close the...